become young very sooner, you know,
yes.
quickly, because men are always capable to have children, for example, after that age as well. It seems that everything in nature is balanced, you know. There yes. are some hikmahs, there are some wisdom behind this, that what are some of the benefits of this for ladies?
Yes.
And what are some advantages of this and advantages of this kind of puberty, age of puberty will go to the women themselves?
Yes.
IRIB English Radio presents questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Answering your theological questions in questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. Send us your questions to English Radio at irib.ir. Praises to Allah, all glory is to Allah. We
worship Allah and no one but Allah. Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Religiously speaking, what are the responsibilities of the baligh people, those who reach the age of puberty, and is it so that they must start their religious obligations right after the age of puberty, or no, before that there are some recommendations to do so?
You know, age of puberty is like a da'wah, like an invitation. You know, when yes. we were so young, sometimes, for example, our parents or elder brothers were invited to some, for example, invitations as guests, you know?
Yes.
We were really sad that why we are not invited in that, for example, wedding ceremony, or I don't know, with that party, for example, invitations,
yes.
you know?
Yes.
Because we did not deserve at that time to be invited.
Yes.
But once we become, for example, older, for example, like 15, 18, 20, then we will be invited like the other people. So that's a kind of pleasure.
Yes.
Here, for example, the holy month of Ramadan, ibadah, prayer, talking to Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is a kind of invitation.
Yes.
Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala send his invitation to the girls sooner, earlier than boys. So that's why it's a pleasure for ladies
okay.
that Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tell them that you can come, you can become my, let's say, guest. I send the invitation to you when you are only 9 years old or 10 years old, you know? So that's why it is a pleasure for ladies, it is a pleasure for women, that they deserve to receive the invitation of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in that age, but boys later in 15 years old. So when you are like children, when you are so young, like teenagers, like kids, for example, even if you invited somewhere, no one expect you to observe certain, for example, rulings, things in that gathering, in that, let's say, place that you are invited. But once you become like the real guest,
yes.
and of course, in that case, you will be expected to observe certain things when you are taking part into that, for example, gathering, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
To sit in a special way, to talk in a special way, you know, to behave, to respect the others, to treat the others very respectfully with honor. And others should respect you, others should honor you, you know? So yes. these are the things that you have to be, obey and follow. Same is the case with these responsibilities for ladies and men and women when they are invited in the let's say, invitation of Almighty Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Yes.
Then they should honor themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They should observe, let's say, certain things for themselves.
Yes.
They should behave differently. They should treat others differently. They should respect themselves and others.
Take care of the mahram,
non-mahram.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a kind of pleasure, you know,
uh-huh.
it's when, for example, a king invites you in his own castle.
Uh-huh.
Of course, he expects you to treat, to behave respectfully with honor, you know, not only yourself, the king, the people, all the participants in that gathering. Here, as the parable of this invitation is like that, that you are invited now in the very, very, let's say, highest, what you can say, in the very, qualified kind of invitation, then now you have to observe certain things because
mm-hmm.
you are honored with this invitation. That's why we should look at all these observations respectfully, what we can say honorably, because it is like a pleasure, like an honor that we are now invited in such a place and we are expected to observe certain things. We should treat like with honor, with respect, with dignity, yeah, with chastity.
Yes.
This is for the, not only for the ladies, also for boys.
That's all right. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani, for a nice elaboration regarding the concept of bulugh or age of puberty according to religious beliefs. It was very kind of you. And thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. For more information, please visit our website at parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Iruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Pakistan has joined the global celebrations of a very special Nowruz that has coincided with the holy month of Ramadan. Nowruz, which translates to New Day, is celebrated by millions of peoples worldwide as the Persian New Year, symbolizing rebirth, renewal, and arrival of spring.
To all my fellow Pakistanis celebrating Nowruz, I say let's cherish our cultural diversity and come together in solidarity. May this new year bring us prosperity, peace and happiness.
Despite its Persian origins, Nowruz in Pakistan is celebrated with a distinctive local flavor, incorporating regional traditions and customs. Pakistanis have their own customs to welcome Nowruz. Besides preparing special meals and decorating the dining area with special dried and fresh fruits, the ancient occasion also creates an opportunity for individuals to mend broken ties, forgive others, let go of the past, and build stronger relationships in the coming new year.
For me, Nowruz is a time of reflection and renewal. It's a reminder to leave behind the past year's troubles and embrace the opportunities that lie ahead. It's a celebration of life, growth, and the beauty of nature.
We clean our house, we visit our friends, we celebrate this day, we enjoy a lot of festive foods. And you know, this day brings a lot of joy and happiness in our lives. So, happy Nowruz to all of you.
Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari and Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif have extended their heartfelt greetings to all those who are celebrating Nowruz in Pakistan and around the world. Both leaders also called for embracing the spirit of Nowruz and promoting the message of peace, compassion, unity, and kindness.
Nowruz signifies regeneration at the start of a new cycle. It transcends simple festivity, standing as a cultural landmark that enhances the diversity of human society. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
A
After weeks of silence, Kitab Hezbollah Resistance Group, one of the biggest units within Iraq's popular mobilization units, reminds the government, as well as officials in the committee tasked with overseeing the withdrawal of U.S. military, that they should not grant immunity to the occupying forces, or else gates of hell will open.
These foreign forces have been violating our sovereignty for years now. In January 2020, Donald Trump ordered the assassination of our anti-terror commanders, Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad airport. And lately, they are violating it by assassination of Iraqi resistance commanders.
Kitab Hezbollah also warned that any removal of leaders of popular mobilization units must be decided by the PMU internally. It says acting otherwise would be a significant mistake.
Our government has made it clear on multiple occasions that the need for U.S. military forces have ended. Our security forces are capable of running the country's security system and face any threat. Washington is clearly trying to rally around the negotiations, and it is a clear attempt to delay their withdrawal from the country.
In January, the Iraqi resistance decided to halt the attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The attacks were started on October 19 in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Observers say that the suspension was to allow a climate of serenity for talks between Baghdad and Washington over the U.S. military presence. But as some have rightly noted, Washington has no intention to change its behavior in Iraq.
It is obvious that Washington is trying to gain more time to keep its military presence in Iraq. Our government needs to push forward and speed up the pace of negotiations to end the presence of these foreign forces and save our country's political, economic, and social stability.
On paper, the U.S. military forces are present in the country for advisory purposes, as well as training the Iraqi forces to fight Daesh terrorist group. However, in practice, the U.S. forces have shown a different objective by violating Iraqi sovereignty, attacking PMU positions, and killing top Iraqi commanders. Since the start of their operations in October, the resistance in Iraq has been pushing the government to end the U.S. military presence in the country. Also, they have time and again reiterated their solidarity with Palestinians. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack, as he declared March 24 a National Day of Mourning. At least 11 suspects, including four perpetrators who directly participated in the shooting spree, have been arrested. The four direct perpetrators were detained in Bryansk region. According to the intelligence service, the terrorists planned to cross the Russian-Ukrainian border. The Russian president vowed to punish all involved in the massacre.
All the perpetrators, organizers, and customers of this crime will suffer a fair and inevitable punishment, whoever they are, whoever guides them. I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity, this attack on Russia, on our people.
The Daesh Takfiri terror group claimed responsibility, but Moscow has dismissed the claim, asserting that investigation is still underway to ascertain the main culprits. Russia's security service says the Moscow attackers had contacts in Ukraine supporting them. During interrogation, a detained terrorist said he was promised 5,000 rubles to carry out the terrorist attack. He claimed he watched a certain preacher on Telegram and allegedly his assistant contacted the man.
The perpetrators are ignorant, illiterate people who will commit any crime for money. The question is different. Where is the planning center? Not a single international organization can act in the international arena, especially in a state like Russia, where there are strong power structures. Performers can be found anywhere through the agents. We went through this experience in Chechnya. This once again convinces us that international terrorist structures are the work of the CIA and Western intelligence services.
The attack, which came amid Ukraine's war with Russia, was the deadliest in the country since the Beslan school siege in 2004. After Friday's attack, Putin held discussion with his Belarusian counterpart Alexander Lukashenko. Both leaders confirmed their readiness to work together in the fight against terrorism.
In his address, President Putin said Moscow attackers were preparing to flee towards Ukraine, where a window had been prepared for them with the help of Ukraine. Now it remains to be seen how Russia is going to react to the massacre, which came in a very volatile region and amid its war against Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Syrians used to say, no one sleeps hungry, but that was 13 years before the devastating terrorist war that was waged upon them, the war that has pushed many Syrians below the poverty line. SAID is an association that has been helping these people by providing daily meals to the needy during the fasting month for over a decade. Despite the increasing challenges, they are determined to continue with their mission.
We're currently operating a kitchen called Hunger Be Gone. Unfortunately, our resources this year are less than previous years due to the circumstances the country has been through, such as the earthquake disaster that drained a lot of financial resources. We distribute around 200 to 250 meals every day to the people who come to the association, while our motorcycle team also delivers meals to remote areas.
As a chef, I start every day at 9 a.m. by preparing the water and cooking the chicken for the scheduled meal. I have been volunteering for 5 years to help my fellow countrymen in these difficult circumstances.
Syrians have demonstrated their sense of responsibility in various ways during this crisis, particularly during the month of Ramadan. The Holy Month of Mercy encourages people to be selfless and to help alleviate the sufferings of others. Voluntary work is one of the ways through which Syrians showcase their contributions to society.
So we are here not only to donate financially, but to donate our time more specifically. Volunteering is something very important, especially for our generation. We need to teach people that giving doesn't always mean that you need to take something in return. So we're here to volunteer with our time, to try to help people as much as we can. So SAID Association is our vessel to do that.
Today we came to make meals for the people in need. First we cut the vegetables, then we shredded the chicken, and now we are cooling down the rice and the chicken. Then we're gonna put it in boxes and give it to people in need.
Despite the United States' theft of their resources and the inhuman sanctions imposed upon them, which have put Syrians in dire living conditions, they steadfastly hold on to their love for their country, united against all the odds. They strive to find their way through this dark tunnel towards the dawn of a brighter life.
Syrians have always firmly stood together, not only against terrorism, but also in the face of unjust Western sanctions, through voluntary initiatives that show their love to each other and to their homeland. Ibrahim Wahid, Damascus.
Since the Al-Aqsa flood operation and the Israeli genocidal aggression against Gaza began early October last year, Hezbollah has taken a stance of defense against Israeli military targets near Lebanon's southern border. Now, months later, a propaganda campaign has been launched against such efforts, with social media posts and bulletin boards across the Lebanese capital, Beirut, and beyond reading slogans such as "Implementing international resolutions enhances stability" or "Lebanon does not want war."
If you asked all Lebanese whether they would want an Israeli war to begin in Lebanon, the unanimous response would be no, especially with decades of experience with the Israeli regime and its disproportionate targeting of civilians. Yet what seems like a simple billboard has deeper implications for a country like Lebanon.
Experts tell Press TV that certain groups in Lebanon have launched this campaign to put people against the resistance at a time of war. But are these factions working alone?
This campaign, we can say that it doesn't represent the Lebanese people, and especially in that it is, and we have informations, it is funded by foreign countries.
Those parties and those factions, they were controlled by the U.S. Embassy in Beirut. The U.S. Ambassador, Dorshi Shea, as she was departing Beirut and also receiving her successor, Lisa Johnson, they were working on this in a way that would, help Amos Hochstein and his pressures put on Lebanon.
Hochstein, who is an Israeli-American businessman and lobbyist, has gone back and forth from Beirut to Tel Aviv in attempts to stop the resistance operations, without any mention of an end to Israeli violations of Lebanon's rights, which have persisted for over 17 years.
By supporting the resistance in Gaza or in Palestine, the resistance in Lebanon have prevented war. It didn't start the war. And especially when the Lebanese people and the Palestinian people and the Iraqi people, and all people in the world, are not protected by the international decisions.
Some people inside Lebanon, they are working as agents of the Americans and the Zionists, unfortunately, trying to accuse Hezbollah and the resistance of false things, misinformation, though it is crystal clear that the resistance is trying to protect Lebanon.
With growing popular support and despite the pressure from foreign and domestic sides, Hezbollah has been adamant on proceeding with its support of military operations as long as the Israeli onslaught against Gaza continues. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The celebration of Nowruz and the arrival of the Persian year of 1403 was held at the Rome residence of the ambassador of the Islamic Republic of Iran to Italy. A well-laid aft-seen table bearing seven auspicious items, starting with the letter S, was put out as the guests, mostly Iranian expats and Italians, were welcoming the first day of the new year and the arrival of spring.
Nowruz is much more than a tradition, it is a culture. Nowruz symbolizes the victory of good over evil, the balance of the spring. Nowruz means to lay all grievances aside and to celebrate family ties and friendship. Nowruz is a time for peace and reconciliation. It is a time for cleaning our homes.
The embassy's Nowruz celebration ceremony included a feast of Iranian food, followed by vibrant traditional music. Millions of people across the world celebrate Nowruz and its traditional rituals that emphasize the values of peace, solidarity, and goodwill towards all. 25,000 Iranians currently residing in Italy are among those who celebrate the Persian New Year.
I'm from Tehran. I've been living in Italy for 40 years. Even though we are far away from our homeland, we were all waiting for the Nowruz celebrations. It's really important for us because that's where our roots lie.
Io sono Gaudia, sono italiana.
My name is Gaudia and I'm Italian. I've been married to an Iranian man for 49 years. The Nowruz tradition has become a part of my life. I love celebrating nature and renewal in nature, and I'm proud that I'm passing on this wonderful tradition to my grandchildren.
People at the gathering share the same belief that it is important to embrace Nowruz's universal message of renewal and unity, and that its celebration is also an opportunity to reflect on the past year, nurture new hopes, and celebrate the continuous cycle of life. Max Civili, Rome.
Hundreds of people have engaged in a 41-kilometer pilgrimage, symbolically depicting the length of the Gaza Strip and a trek that scores of Palestinians have been forced to make due to the US-backed Israeli campaign of genocide against them. The event has been organized by a collective of Christian bodies. The organizers say it is important to demonstrate that Christian Zionism does not represent them.
The church has been very complicit within this genocide and within Palestinian suppression more generally, and because of that is not condemning what they're doing, is not recognizing what they're doing as ethnic cleansing and genocide, and not speaking out. And we wanted to challenge that narrative and challenge that stance and show an expression of solidarity, show that that's not the only thing coming out of the church.
The demonstration also coincides with South Africa's commemoration of the Sharpeville massacre, when the apartheid regime gunned down 69 protesters in what is recognized as a turning point in the struggle for liberation. For those who participated, the Palestinian suffering resonates deeply.
And what I saw today in my own, as I walked, you know, because it's a pilgrimage, reflecting, I said to myself, you know, I feel my feet, you know, burning. I feel this old legs not moving as it should. But it's nothing in comparison what people are experiencing.
The South African public is still asleep, and they must start waking up to see what Israel is doing. For what they do there, they can also come and do anywhere else in the world.
I'm a proud Jew. I'm not a Zionist, and I never have been. And I think that what the Netanyahu government is doing is actually a moral genocide. Whether they call it illegal, I don't know whether it fits legally, but it's morally a genocide. And I'm appalled. I'm heartbroken. As somebody who's lived through apartheid, we have seen this before. We should know better.
The Gaza ceasefire pilgrimage coincided with the somber Christian period of Lent, and sacrifice and resilience were recurring themes pilgrims pointed to as they attempted to symbolically walk in the footsteps of Gazans. The Gaza ceasefire march is another example of the human resolve for justice, and as Palestinians endure the latest Israeli aggression for almost 6 months now, the people of the world will only intensify their commitment for Palestinian liberation. Hassan Sirip, Cape Town.
Afghanistan's reliance on Pakistan for access to international markets has been a long-standing challenge. However, recent disputes have pushed the Taliban authorities to seek alternatives. The Taliban have said they will invest around $35 million in Iran's Chabahar port, located in the country's southeast. The move aims to reduce Afghanistan's economic dependence on Pakistan, which has been marred by political friction and trade disruptions.
Chabahar is one of the most important economic and trade routes for Afghanistan. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan tries to have strong bilateral economic and trade relations with Iran as part of its economic policy. This port allows Afghanistan to broaden its trade with Iran, West Asia, and Europe. That's why we are specially focused on Chabahar and seek to invest there.
Analysts believe this could be a turning point for Afghanistan's international trade relations. They say that Iran has been an ideal trade partner for Afghanistan, and accessing Chabahar port will further facilitate Afghanistan's regional cooperation.
The benefits of Chabahar port for Afghanistan include its short distance with the country's borders. It allows goods to enter our country at a low price. It is especially suitable with the overall economic situation of Afghans. Another benefit is that it opens a big route for our exports, which is in dire need of expansion. When we become able to expand our exports, our economy will grow rapidly.
As the Taliban government seeks to diversify its trade routes and reduce its reliance on Pakistan, the decision to invest in Iran's Chabahar port marks a significant shift in Afghanistan's economic strategy. Experts say the outcome of this move will not only impact Afghanistan's relations with Pakistan, but also shape the geopolitical dynamics in the region. Iran and Afghanistan have the potential and opportunity to cooperate in many fields. Trade and industry in particular can bring the two neighbors closer in a very volatile region. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
کتاب
Trinity College in the UK has invested millions of dollars in companies involved in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza and businesses that benefit from the occupation of Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, scores of students held a protest outside the University of Cambridge's wealthiest college recently to demand the higher seat of learning divest millions of dollars from companies arming, supporting, and profiting from the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. Demonstrators carried signs reading, cease fire now, and divest from genocide outside Trinity College following a story published by Middle East Eye last month, which found that the college had invested £61,735 in the Zionist regime's largest arms company, Elbit Systems. Based in the city of Haifa, Elbit produces at least 85% of the drones and land-based equipment used by the Zionist regime's army. The company's weapons have reportedly been used in Gaza since October 7th and are also reported to have been used in the occupied West Bank and southern Lebanon. Middle East Eye also revealed that Trinity has investments worth approximately $3.2 million in Caterpillar, a U.S.-based heavy equipment company that has long been the target of boycott campaigns for its sale of bulldozers to the Zionist regime's army. At least one of the banners held up at the recent protest explicitly referenced Elbit and Caterpillar's roles in the occupation of Palestine. As the world-leading educational institution, Trinity must not be investing in companies causing so much death and destruction that may amount to genocide, and instead should be supporting the college's mission of advancing education and research, the protesters said in an open letter. Pressure has been mounting on the Trinity College to divest from companies complicit in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza after the UK-based International Centre of Justice for Palestinians, ICJP, issued a legal notice to the institution warning that officers, directors, and shareholders at the college may be individually criminally liable if they maintain their investments in arms companies that are potentially complicit in Israeli war crimes and crimes against humanity. On March 9th, an activist from Palestine Action spray-painted, then slashed a 1914 painting of Lord Balfour at Trinity. The incident, which was condemned by Britain's Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowen, is now under police investigation. To date, more than 31,000 Palestinians have been killed and at least 71,000 wounded in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. The UN announced earlier this month that 80% of Gaza is now uninhabitable, while the hunger rate stands at 100%. The UN and several aid agencies have repeatedly warned that Gaza is on the brink of famine and have pressed the Zionist regime to allow aid in. At least 25 people have died from malnutrition and dehydration since the start of the war, including a 10-year-old child with the cerebral palsy. Last month, the UK joined Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, the US, Germany and France in coordinating aid drops with the Zionist regime in different areas of the blockaded Gaza Strip. However, the besieged Palestinians have said that airdropped aid quantities are too small to deal with the needs of a starving population in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Crescent International wrote, as the low-intensity regional war and transformation take shape in West Asia, the fronts against apartheid Israel and its Western enablers are acquiring a multidimensional character. One of those multidimensional characteristics involves a grassroots economic boycott by consumers of Western and Israeli businesses. Economic boycott against the Zionist regime is not a new phenomenon. It hits the apartheid entity where it feels and hurts the most. It's one of the most significant weak spots of the Zionist regime occupying Palestine. While purely econometric reasons are certainly important, it is only one of the factors and not the factor. A significant number of Zionist colonizers in Palestine hold foreign citizenship. Figures vary from 10% according to the Dual Citizenship Report to 17% according to Times of Israel report of 2016 to 22% according to Israeli blogger Daniel Barobim. There is a speculation that the actual figures may be as high as 35% or even 50% of Israelis holding dual citizenship. They will not stick around in a hostile environment, which will become even more difficult as economic, political, and military pressure continues to increase on the Zionist regime. When a better option is easily available, away from war and economic ruin, not all, but many people will opt for the easier option, leave. Both the current Zionist mass murder campaign in Palestine and the regional assistance to Israel are unprecedented in nature and totally out of proportions. This applies to the economic and boycott angle of resistance against Israel and its Western enablers. What makes this current limited impact a longer-term strategic challenge to the Zionist regime and brands facing the grassroots boycott is that this time, due to the scale of events in the region, more people have joined and it is clearly having some impact. The phenomenon of limited impact creates a vicious perception cycle, which then translates into concrete negative monetary impact. As some brands can no longer conceal that the grassroots boycott is having an impact, more ordinary consumers are motivated by the fact that their objection to genocide in Palestine is working. This results in more people joining the boycott since they feel empowered. This phenomenon snowballs into a much bigger boycott movement. Those familiar with the politics of the so-called Muslim Street in West Asia and the Arab world know well that boycotting of brands closely associated with Western imperialist regimes has been around for decades. Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, once more, I am honored to be here. And this is Asma. Well, I'm not alone. I have a co-host in here, Brother Mustafa.
Assalamu alaikum. So happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's always happy to be in Youth Station.
We've been talking about different things related to Ramadan. And of course, we know that Ramadan is a very spiritual month. It has a lot of spiritual benefits for us. However, apart from the spiritual benefits, you know, there's a lot of talk about sort of the non-spiritual benefits of Ramadan, right? I can definitely think of many, many different benefits.
Non-spiritual benefits.
Yeah, non-spiritual benefits. You know, things that impact other people. Although, you know, one way, it depends on how you define spirituality as well, right? One could say that all of life is spirituality, but sometimes we can sort of like separate the two, right? What would you say are some benefits that you could see in your own life or in others that you've seen that would maybe fall into that category?
The one that is interesting, like I used to say that there are some of those people who, when they enter the holy month of Ramadan, it's more of a party. Like for these party comers, the thing that's going to happen in their life is that they're going to take care of what they eat in a more of a, you know, as if they are going to have more of a healthy diet, like in these days, because they have to watch over whatever they eat. So this is one point.
There's definitely a lot of health benefits. There's so much discussion about, you know, the number of health benefits that fasting has during Ramadan. You know, just losing weight, I think. But, you know, we do have like a lot of recommendations about what we should be eating, how we should be breaking our fast. I think if people follow those sort of the Prophet and the Imams, they gave us diet plans as well.
Yeah.
You know, what are some of the best things? And now we have doctors who do the same thing as well. They tell us, you know, what you should eat, when you should eat it. I think if you follow those sort of guidelines, then you won't face that issue. Whereas you'll face that issue throughout the year as well, in a way, right?
Exactly.
If you're not having a good diet. But I think I mentioned another episode, you know, I taught intermittent fasting, right?
Yeah,
which is very popular, you know, in terms of losing weight. You know, the people use that. Intermittent fasting would be basically you're fasting on some days and you're not fasting others, or you're fasting certain hours of the day and you're not fasting others.
Yeah, certain special hours.
So those have like benefits on your diet. Yeah. So I think there's that's like just one of the main benefit, one of the big benefits that I can see.
Exactly. For the people who are seeking to know what are the non-spiritual benefits that I would get from the holy month of Ramadan, the other one, I guess, is going to be for those people who go to work. They have to learn how to manage their time.
Managing your time, on top of that, I would say managing like yourself and your like, you know, stress.
Exactly.
Without food and water and like, you know, maybe sleep. That is a, like, it trains you to manage stress better, right? I feel that is a benefit. Although I know in the beginning of Ramadan, like my wife will tell me that I'm being really grumpy, for example, you know. For us who, you know, for anyone who's trying to be better, I would say then you'd learn to handle stress and like difficult conditions way better than
that's normal. A nice point as well. And then when the holy month is finished, I guess for those people who go to work regularly, like they're going to be so proud of themselves for what they have achieved, because the number of hours they're going to have asleep is going to be reduced. The number of time they're going to be devoting for their job is going to be reduced at home. I mean,
right.
Like if you have a research like me, you're not going to have enough of time to go for it. So things are going to be so problematic, yet you have to learn how to manage it.
Well, you know, I think that's another benefit, by the way, that it breaks you from your normal routine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're maybe spending, let's say, too much time on your studies or too much time on research, and those are things that you should be doing. I think Ramadan gives you the opportunity to sort of break away from that and devote your time elsewhere. It's kind of giving you a break, right, from your day-to-day life. Mm-hmm. So I see that almost as a positive as well.
I hope teachers would understand that. that would be so good if they understand this angle of life as well.
Right. Another part I think related to this is like breaking your habits. Right, I think we all have certain habits that we would like to let go of. We would like to change, right? And Ramadan has that benefit in the sense that not only is your routine changing, but your willpower is becoming much stronger.
Oh,
right?
Now that you're speaking of willpower, let's go for a break.
Okay,
and then we'd be back.
Okay. Okay, so we're back from the break, and
and it's Youth Station, by the way.
And this is Youth Station. We're back from the break, and you know, I was discussing right before the break that one of the sort of
willpower,
the one of the non-spiritual benefits, maybe. Although I think this
for the party comers.
I think, by the way, this is directly related to spirituality, but we can sometimes people will categorize it as sort of non-spiritual, right? In the sense that because your willpower is used in many places, right? When you're forcing yourself to not eat, you know, when you're preventing yourself from not eating, obviously your willpower is becoming stronger. And so in Islam, you know, we talk about the jihad al-nafs, you know, our struggle with ourselves, right, which is considered to be the greatest struggle, even more than like a normal war, for example. We all know the popular hadith, you know, in the Prophet went
to
war.
To overcome the internal conflict.
So one way to do that, by the way, is we're recommending in Islam is to even prevent yourself from having halal things, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, eating and drinking is a very halal act, right? You know, we're supposed to eat it to survive. But during Ramadan, we're told not to do it, right? We're told not to do this halal act. It becomes forbidden for us. That's one way we're just making ourselves stronger.
A practice of that conflict and war, the internal war that we go through.
And that helps break habits. Like I know many people who smoke, right? And they can't smoke during this time. Some people end up coming out of it with, and they quit their smoking habit as well because of Ramadan. Not everyone.
They have a strong will, I suppose, because some other people, unfortunately, it's very difficult to change your habits.
It is.
Only by going through 30 days, unless you are concentrating on that. You are focused on that desire to change something in your habits.
You're right. I mean, that may not be the only method, you know. Yeah. Sometimes it requires more. Sometimes it may require medicine to, if you want to quit certain habits. But what we're saying is that it helps, right? It has a benefit.
Another
even
point,
on a small level.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So another point I would say is to wake up at midnight and have some praying time for yourself. That is also another interesting part. Actually, it's spiritual.
How would you say that's not spiritual?
For example, like for when my grandfather was living with us, when he was with us, he could not actually fast. But the thing that happened for him was that he woke up with us for the midnight. Mm. And then this was a change of mood for him. Like, he was sick and he could not fast. So spiritually, he was not connected to the ritual that we were going through. But at the same time, he was going through some good emotions and feelings, like he's waking up in the midnight and he's having some, you know, chit-chat with his children. So it's going to be a change of a mood.
You're right. And I see that with my kids, by the way. You know, my kids are 10. My son is now 10 and my daughter 7. So my son, for the past at least 3 to 4 years, I remember he would love waking up for the morning, you know, for the Sahri, the morning meal before fasting. And yeah, he loved that we were sitting in the dark. You know, he wouldn't let us turn on the lights, for example. We would have a small light on. He enjoyed that aspect of it a lot.
Now, even we have been through that. I remember even my childhood.
Yeah, same.
It was just an amazing thing to wake up with them. And the night which they did not wake me up, I was just angry with them in the morning. Why didn't you wake me up?
Oh, man, you sound just like my son.
So because it's an interesting emotion. It's a different thing.
Well, related to this is sort of, I would say, the social aspect or impact of Ramadan, right? That just the fact when we sit down together and we have this sort of different meal, either with, if it's just with our family or even if it's with, you know, friends, that's a huge benefit, I think.
Of course.
Just getting to see people, getting to talk to people.
You get to know more about them.
Yeah. And then I would say a big non-spiritual benefit is the food, right? The amazing dishes that our moms or other family members make.
They're going to be too creative in this month.
Right. So those are amazing benefits that I think we can see that come out of this.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Well, one other factor I think that sort of comes to my mind is concentration.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if this is a benefit, by the way. I think this is maybe a non-benefit.
To concentrate more for people who are overthinker, it's not a good thing to learn.
Although, you know, one interesting thing is that, okay, so one thing that happens for me during Ramadan is I end up sleeping less, right? Even if I want to sleep more, I can't. I think a lot of times people have the opposite effect, they end up sleeping more.
Yeah.
For me, and so the interesting is during the beginning of the month, I'll still sleep more. But as I continue fasting, I see that I have more energy or like my sleep becomes less, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes, yes, the concentration does become better. In what sense? In the sense that when you're not focused on, for example, eating or food or anything else, you're able to like sort of...
You have one single direction.
Yeah. You're able to like really focus.
There are
focus
no
on
other temptations.
Yeah. And by the way, our teacher was telling us just today that one of the benefits... So you know how many times you start feeling really like lazy or sleepy like towards the afternoon?
Yeah.
But if you sort of persevere through that, you sort of suddenly see like your energy's back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually a physiological reason for that, right? At the beginning, your stomach, you know, is sending messages to your brain. It's saying, hey, you know, this person needs like food, like send food, like it needs glucose, you know, it needs all those things to sort of function. But when you sort of don't do that, then the next step is that your body turns to the fat that's stored within you. right? And it starts breaking down that fat and it turns that into glucose, and that sends the messages to your brain that, you know, this person has glucose in them. And that makes you feel less hungry or less tired.
I was actually watching a documentary which was fully about this topic that you already mentioned. Mm. They were saying that fasting is a good reason, is a good way of protecting your body from getting into cancers. Because your body is going to break all those unneeded cells that are gathering together. Mm. So then your body is going to be protected from cancer. So
if you, you know, if you don't have a good diet, then it's going to ruin
all
your exercise.
All the workouts are going to go into nowhere.
So similar with fasting, you know, nobody's saying that you're guaranteed to have like health benefits.
Yeah.
It's only if you sort of meet other conditions as well.
If only you concentrate on what you want.
Right, right. And speaking of concentration, I can't even pronounce words that well right now.
It's okay.
Yeah. So
you're fasting.
This is the. I don't know if this is gonna. If they will allow them to air this, but this is the first day of Ramadan, by the way, that we're doing this. So, if I sound a little bit off,
so all the errors are just exonerated.
One thing I want to add, though, is that, you know, all of these things that we're saying are non-spiritual, they do sort of, they all lead up to spirituality, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
If your health is good, if you're concentrating, if you have a good social life, you have a good family life, these are all sort of, these are acts of worship, right, from an Islamic point of view, you know, and they do add to your spirituality. Mm-hmm. For me, it's very difficult to divorce things from spirituality, you know, or to separate things, because I kind of like to see things in
They're
that
all
lens.
Interconnected.
Yeah, it's all interconnected. Like, it's part of yourself from who you are, right?
So whether it is spiritual or non-spiritual, I wish everybody to have a fruitful and blissful month in which they could just help themselves grow more and more and redefine themselves in a better way. So thank you, brother, and thank you, dear listeners.
Yep.
This was all the time
we had for today. Thank you for listening.
So until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Israel's genocidal war on Gaza Strip enters its 171st day, with the total death toll rising to more than 32,200. Another Palestinian journalist has been killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza. He was killed along with his son in an area west of Gaza City. A new report shows that the U.S. and